Welcome back to WNST, Towson, Baltimore, and Baltimore Positive. Final segment, and we may extend this one a little bit and invite her back. Dr. Sonia Santelise joining us here. From Baltimore City Schools, our CEO, and final segment.
And we've got a commitment that she will come back.
All right. Well,
absolutely.
We've had here is, Don comes from a family of educators. His daughter's a lifer educator. Appears she's going to continue to do that unless the superintendent gets her fired like you 20 years ago. But a lot of teachers don't make it that far, right?
Yeah,
You are probably beyond the challenges of the children, the schools, the heat, the water, all of that stuff that we talk about. One of your challenges is recruiting the best people to teach our children.
Mm-hmm. What are the numbers we hear, Nestor? Like 50%
after two or three years?
Yeah, I think it's about that.
Right.
It's about, like, we hire a good anywhere from 400 to 500, some year 600 new teachers every year, and that's because we have teachers that aren't staying. In some cases, it's what, you know, some folks call desirable attrition. Not everybody's cut out to teach, and you know that, Don. Like, and not everybody's cut out to teach in Baltimore City. What is more troubling, and what we're paying far closer attention to, is who are the people who we really want to stay, who are saying enough already.
Right,
right.
And yesterday, I mean, the timing for this question is great, because yesterday I sat with some folks who crunched the data for our teacher survey, just as they were giving in the spring, like what we call their letters of intent. Are you going to stay or are you going to go? And there are some real emerging themes in that data. Some about Black teachers in particular, but some, frankly, that are all teachers. So one of the things was the safety issue, right? And I told you that's why we're looking deeply at, like, do teachers feel like they are being backed in cases where they feel unsafe, right? So when parents come into a building who might be so agitated, right, that they feel, you know, threatened and things. And so, you know, that was one piece. But the other piece, what's really interesting, is that wasn't the number one. And the number one wasn't money. Mm-mm. The number one, and close followed by a number two, number one was feeling recognized, wanting my work to feel recognized, and second behind that was wanting to feel respected for the knowledge base I have. The good news about the first is we as a district over the last 2 years have really been working harder to recognize all of our staff, including our teachers, right? So, you know, teachers were saying things in this survey like, yeah, we know we got old buildings. We know that, you know, we don't have all the money to fix them all now. But that's not what's making them leave, right? The chip paint, that's not making them leave. What's making them leave is a feeling like, am I just doing this and no one is recognizing my work. So we've been doing more. For example, we have a couple of gatherings a year, and I come out to those gatherings, not that I think I'm anything, but for some people, seeing the CEO matters.
Oh, I think it matters, sure.
And so we had a big celebration at Visionary Arts Museum for all of our new teachers last year. I was there, a lot of my cabinet was there, having more gatherings. I take a group of first-year teachers out to dinner every year and just hear from them, like, what's going on with you? We have what we call milestone celebration. And in some ways it's heartening, in some ways it's slightly depressing, but what we do now, and our human capital office has done a great job, at 5-year intervals, we bring people to central office, we give them a certificate, I come down and talk to them, they take a picture, we give them some, like, hot hors d'oeuvres, and we just recognize and say thank you.
It's hard. Listen,
on a daily basis.
It is hard, work. Anybody that doesn't think being a teacher, if you're doing it well, is hard work, lives on Mars.
That's right.
So, as you said, I'm not surprised at all that it's not about money.
It's not.
They knew that going in.
It's just not about money. I need to feel validated that this hard thing that I am doing is making a difference.
That's right. Overwhelmingly that, and I want to feel heard. That was kind of the respected piece. So when we're implementing new curriculum, is somebody hearing me, or are they just telling me do it, right? When I think that there might be a better way, I don't know, to do lunch duty, do I have a place where I can go to say that? And the most satisfied teachers in our system, and I think this is true across the board, feel like their principal hears them, feel like they have a voice, even if they're not always, you know, even if the leader doesn't always agree with them, they can, you know, they're approachable, they can lead, you know, amongst their colleagues, you know, lead professional development, they have opportunities to grow. We've tried to do some of that with our contract and the way we've structured it, but it still comes down to the school level. And in those everyday things. So like the number of people who positively cited the milestone reception that I was just describing was amazing to me. And I thought, my God.
Like, make sure we do it again.
Yes. Right? And now we do it monthly.
Right.
Now we do it monthly because, you know, we're saying to ourselves, my God, really? Like spending some time with people and acknowledging and a few hot hors d'oeuvres.
Humanity.
I used to say,
we used to have this discussion, both Jim Smith, I can go all the way back to Dutch, but whether it was Jim or Dutch or Kevin or myself, we always had to remind ourselves that when folks got called to the executive suite to receive a proclamation and have their picture taken with the county executive saying, thank you, we did so many, you became sort of just like, it was routine, it's what you do. And when you would see them bring their family and their children, afterward we would say, guys, let's file this away. This matters to these people.
That's right.
And that's what you're saying.
That's right. That's exactly right. And I will tell you, I think it took me a couple of years in this seat to really understand the impact. Because, you know, I come from Boston where nobody, you know, you call there, you call the mayor by the first name.
Right.
So it's not, you know, it's like a... But I really, I will say Baltimore and Baltimore City Schools has taught me not to actually sweat the small stuff, right? That certificates, to your point, do matter. And you're right. Like, people are bringing their families.
Oh, yeah.
They get to take pictures. And, you know, that is not asking too much. It's not asking too much. You know, last year for Teacher Appreciation Day, you know, I wrote a note that went to every teacher. I didn't think that was going to be as big a deal, but it was. Like, I had teachers emailing me saying, this is the first time I've heard from the head of the system. And so, like, what I'm learning is we do have to sweat the small stuff. We invested in secretaries and city schools for the first time in terms of leadership training. And, you know, I had some secretaries tell me this is the first time 20-plus years in the district that I have gotten training on anything other than a new computer software system. Like, we actually asked them, you know, how do you lead? What is your personality type? And
you asked them. Listen to that.
We asked them. And we have a ways to go. Like, I mean, I will tell you, I still get an inbox with, you know, some angry letters. But, you know, now we get principals saying, you know, whenever I meet with them, you know, give me one or two folks in Central who have made your job easier. And there's always shout-outs. And so we're trying to get those kinds of shout-outs also to people. So we're trying to shift culture. It's going to take a while. But I'm seeing that those little things aren't so little.
Well, you know, again, appreciate you sharing all that. Before we, and we have to do Kerwin before you get away.
Oh,
but before we do that, again, I want to encourage folks. I'm sure you've been inspired by Dr. Santelices today and the other episodes. Go on, jump on YouTube, look for her TED Talk. In that TED Talk, you talked about three steps to urban education. And what I loved about them is they were so simplistic. But I thought, sometimes what they say, the simple stuff can be hard.
Yes.
Step one was rigor. Talk about rigor.
So rigor really is, you know, it's not about, like, you know, beating anybody into submission. Rigor is we've got to have high standards. High standards for behavior, high standards, high expectations. You know, one of the things that I do say, and you mentioned it earlier, one of you guys did, that, like, when I go into classrooms, I have to ask myself, would I be comfortable with my girls sitting in this classroom?
No, always.
Right?
I call it my Jennifer and Jeffrey rule.
Oh, I love that.
That's every time I walk in a room.
Exactly. And so, you know, or am I going to fudge the edges? Because, well, this is good enough for some people's kids. Lisa Delpit has a book, you know, from years ago, Other People's Children. And a lot of this rigor is, you know, we would not want any of our children in a school where at the end of 5 years, 8 years, 3 years, they're not able to write a legible paragraph.
We shouldn't tolerate it,
We
right?
should not tolerate that.
It's back to Nestor, hatred of incompetence.
Hatred
we shouldn't,
of incompetence.
We shouldn't
yes.
tolerate it.
That's
Wait,
right.
Well,
That's
we started
right.
this whole thing about who's going to be the next mayor here.
Yeah.
And he said, first episode, the next mayor has to have a hatred of incompetence.
Yeah. Yep.
So you got that. So you've got rigor. Then you talked about engagement and ownership, and you were really clear as to what those meant.
Well, how clear did you think I was?
I thought you meant that engagement is beyond the traditional of when I walk in, does it look like kids are paying attention? Does it look like they're, you know, are they on task? But really a bigger question of, do they feel they have an ownership in their education? Did I pass?
Yes, you were good. You must have been a principal.
I didn't know there would be a quiz, but I'm glad I...
That's true. Well, I was making sure I was... But no, but that is exactly what I meant. And I think part of it is that we're seeing, again, is when our young people are given the supports, and we've got to help teachers figure out what those are. Like, we can't just expect them to know that without supporting them in it. But when our kids are given those supports, they actually eat up the learning, right? And so I have seen young people with local Baltimore authors like Dee Watkins, and they are just riveted. I've also seen those same young people not be afraid of having, you know, pretty deep conversations about Chaucer, right? Like, so our new curriculum in middle school has excerpts from Chaucer, and, you know, people would say, well, we don't know if kids from West Baltimore can really handle Chaucer. Kids from West Baltimore can handle Chaucer. Like,
aren't you
okay
thinking about when you sit there, when Dr. Santa Lisa says that, when David Hornbeck was on, he was something like Gifted and Talented, and he said his kids were always in give, and I know his kids work for you, but he said, I always thought it was great. He said, but I always went to the next question. Why isn't every kid getting this kind of instruction?
And that is a very David Hornbeck quote, so I'm not surprised. I am not surprised at all. But it is that, right? And yes, some kids, you know, take a little longer to get there. There's a lovely clip, which I might send you the link to, from current teacher of the year, Kier Butts, and one of his students in his class, who is a few years behind in reading. And he, this young man, talks about the fact that, you know, I'm not that good of a reader, but Mr. Butts thought I could do this honors work. And he just goes on to talk about, right, the work that they were doing, and I can't even remember the actual theme, but it had like kind of international kind of implications, like if we were doing something like independence or something like that. And he is like making references to, you know, well, and it's like this in history.
Mr. Butts thought I could do it.
And Mr. Butts thought I could do it.
Mr. Butts thought I could do it.
The only time we grow is when we're challenged.
Yes.
You have to be challenged to grow.
I tell the story often. I tell the story often. My son was a senior at Catonsville High, and he was trying to get to a certain score on the SAT. He crushed the math part, but he wanted to get more on the verbal.
1590?
And I forget exactly what, but they were good, particularly his math was good. He was a good math student, the bane of his kids'
existence. I say I'm 1570.
There you go.
No, that's the radio station.
There you go.
It's not my SAT.
But he bounced in. It's your Mr. Butts story. And he said, hey, and he was all upbeat. It was his last prep session. I said, got the SAT tomorrow. He said, yeah, I'm good. I said, oh, okay, you're good. He said, yeah, Miss Capel said I'm ready to crush it.
Yes.
You know, it was like Miss Capel, who said, oh, I'm ready to crush it.
That's right. You know? That's right.
Okay.
And I'm sure she helped him get there, right? Which was the whole piece with Mr. Butts. Like, he helped him get there. The other piece that I think you guys will like, that I'll put a pitch for Baltimore Positive, is we have a new kind of curriculum unit this year that we piloted called our Be More Me curriculum.
There you go.
And young
that
people.
That's some money to sign up for.
Yes, it does. Well, actually, we should sign you guys up for
I need to be more me.
We'll come in.
Well, you know, the young people came up with, there was some kind of hoity-toity term for the work, and they came up with Be More Me. But the thing that I love about it is young people are learning the positive history of our city, too. Uh-huh. They're learning about the strengths of our history. They get to interact with real leaders today in Baltimore City so that it counters some of that only negative narrative that we often hear. And they love it. Like, they're getting out, and a number of our teachers are like, we know this is only 9 or 10 weeks, but we need 9 or 10 weeks.
There you go.
Like, of this all the time. But just seeing Baltimore as classroom, as well as, you know, all of the challenges or whatever, like, our young people are saying to us, wow, you know, back to that original engagement piece, what we're learning is connected to our everyday life.
Engagement equals ownership. Love it. Step three was interventions, and what I was struck by, don't think in terms of deficits, folks. Interventions. Tell our listeners what that means. Because Nestor loves the whole equity equal thing. Tell him why intervention doesn't necessarily equal deficits.
Yes. So, and it actually goes back to Mr. Butts' classroom, right? Part of what we know is when we only focus on what kids don't know, right? And we bring things down to their level and never talk about how to connect them to, frankly, where we want them to be. We know kids don't move, that you actually don't grow. And it goes back to something you just said, right? All growth is part of stretch. So part of what we're trying to do is build in opportunities for kids to positively experience, right? Being able to make up the ground that some of them have lost, right? So what does it look like to not have, you know, you're relegated to this special class? I heard from some special educators in our district who were saying, look, we've got to have better supports for kids that are behind because we still want them to hit the grade level curriculum, but we've got to figure out, you know, how to get them there. Some of our interventions, which are supports and positive, is for the first time this year, we guaranteed centrally that every school would have a full-time social worker. That's a positive intervention, right? It's not now you've had a negative behavior with horrible consequences, but is there a place to go? Is there a professional who can help young people process before something explodes? And frankly, what we're finding is that even some of our adult staff need that kind of support. Where do they go when they're feeling stressed?
Sure.
So intervention to your part is about helping you step up. It's not about saying we've got to relegate you to a side corner of the building until you get it right, right?
Never works, right?
You know that.
I'm reminded of a principal who had a discussion, a tough discussion with the staff one day regarding incoming kindergarten students. And I'm thinking about your whole interventions, not deficits. And the tradition at that particular school had been to give the kindergarten students a pre-assessment as they came in, and then those that didn't do really well, pull them out, give them special help, pull them aside, as you said, let's put them aside. And this principal said, why would we do that before we've taught them? We haven't taught them yet. Come back and let's discuss it in January and see who might be where they ought to be.
Well,
but I'm not sure we should be pulling kids out before we've taught them.
Eight times,
and branding
times, right?
them. Because what would happen if we pull them out at that point?
See, and what happens is you get on the slow track. It's impossible to catch up. To your point, they're kindergartners. Sometimes you just had a bad assessment day. I mean, that's true. I have, you know, a middle schooler at home. There are some days she just has a bad test.
She's feeling like a middle schooler.
She's feeling like a middle schooler, right? So are we going to brand them for life because of that? And you're right. And I think it's also how we talk to kids. And I remember being a teacher and saying to some of my, you know, I had a real hard conversation with a young lady who was then in the seventh grade. She saw what her reading test was and she said to me, and I felt horrible, she said, nobody ever told me I couldn't read well. And she was frightened. I could see just her trying to process. And I remember saying to her, it's okay, Tabitha. We're going to get through this together. You can hit this target. And you and I are going to do it together.
There you go.
Right? And that's it. Like, you're not smoothing it over and saying, oh, where you are is fine. But you're also not condemning kids to this kind of low-level track.
Or what's wrong with you.
What's wrong with you, right?
Yeah.
And we as adults have to own our role in that support capacity. Yes, kids have to want it, but I'm old-fashioned that way. Like, I feel like adults should be adults. And if we are going to, you know, have straight talk with kids, we need to be straight and say, nope, you're not where you need to be if you want to be a carpenter. You're not where you need to be if you want to go to, you know, Baltimore City Community College or University of Maryland. But this is what we're going to do to help you get there.
And do we also need to have those tough discussions? And I promise we're going to do Kerwin real quick. I know he's saying, man, we've already taken too much of her time. But
okay.
Do we also need, in terms of those tough discussions with kids, do we need to have tough discussions, but in a fair way, with teachers when you go back to your room and I go back to my, when I walk in and there just isn't any rigor, there's no expectations, they're just going, do I need to sit that teacher down and have the hard discussion, say, would you, again, have your son or daughter in the lesson you just taught?
We do. And we need to do it in an informed, professional way. Because what I hear from teachers is, I want real feedback. Like, don't just come in and tell me it's off. Tell me what I need to be doing to get to a different place. Tell me what you want me to change, right? And I think we owe it to them that if we're going to say this isn't the standard, then just like students, we owe it to them to say, this is the path.
Help me.
To get, that's right. We need to be there and help them to do that.
Help
and,
me.
You know, I was at a talk in Philadelphia this past weekend. One of the things I said that burns teachers is we, you know, we put out this new rigorous curriculum, which we have in Baltimore City in both math and ELA. And then, you know, you get administrators either from central office or the building, you know, walking in, they see something's off, and a teacher asks a genuine question. If I've got a child that's 2 years below grade level, 3, 4 years below grade level, how do you expect me to make the gap between what the seventh grade curriculum is and the third? And if we go in and give that a pat answer, like, well, just scaffold for non-educators, right. Well, just
individualize,
right? That's not an answer for a real teacher, right, with real students in front of him or her. And what it does is it undermines our credibility as leaders, and it doesn't get us any closer. So we've got to also come alongside adults and teachers who are doing really hard jobs. And then I'm all for accountability. Like, right. I'm all for saying, this isn't up to snuff.
Right. Yeah, but we're not an all-purpose employment agency. We're going to help you. But
can I quote you on that?
And you know what?
I want that in a poster.
And we had Stuart Berger on, you know, and Stuart was extremely controversial. We do these Where Are They Now segments.
Stuart's the reason he's sitting here now.
That's true. That is true. He pulled me out. That is true.
It's true.
But Stuart, after all of these years and working with superintendents all across the country, still says, Don, it's still as simple as asking people who the client is. The clients are not the adults.
Yes, thank you.
Right?
I want a poster series of your famous
quotes. I knew he was going to say.
Well, that's Stuart.
You know that? I was going to interrupt
that's
him.
That's Stuart Berger.
It's about the kids.
It's about the client.
Sure
Stuart
is.
Says, it's just,
it
if you
sure
start
is.
With that, who is
yes.
the client?
Yes.
And my good friends, I have a lot of good friends, as you do, in MSEA and in teaching. When he used to say that, I laughed with Stuart, it used to literally make their heads explode. And I would say to them, but if you unpack it, why? He's not saying that you don't matter or the parents don't matter or the business community. What he's saying is, at its core, if I'm a patient going to see a doctor, I'm the only client at that
that's
moment.
Exactly right.
And these kids don't get a do-over.
Yes. You don't get to do first grade again in the same way, right, that you go into it fresh, right? Kids don't have inordinate amounts of time. You both know, like, you know, there's a certain number of things that are so much easier to learn before the age of 10 than they are after the age of 10.
Like Spanish, which I've been trying for 40 years.
Wait.
You shouldn't say that, being from Venezuela heritage.
I've been trying.
All right. We got to let the doctor. Right, before we do, why should people care about Kerwin? Why should they care?
Well, the first thing I'm going to say is the biggest embarrassment as a citizen is when Aaron Maben says the heat doesn't work in my building.
Yeah.
And you sit at the top of that.
Yeah.
And I'm sure you could go down there and blow on it and make a space heater. But this is about money. This is about commitment. This is about politics. This is about government.
Yeah.
You know, this isn't about kids or education. This is about government. And I don't, when I hear Kerwin, the first thing I think is, make the fountains work. Make the schools safe.
Yeah.
Make the heat work.
Make it so Bill Ferguson's not shoveling snow.
Make it
long
so
before
a
your
place
time. In his classroom.
Beautiful children.
I know Bill's told you
Jennifer,
that story.
Jeff would want. I live in Baltimore City. I live at 10 East Lee Street. If I sent my child to school, I don't know what the school's even. I haven't walked into a school in my neighborhood because I don't have a child of that age.
Yeah.
But the media would let me believe that I wouldn't want my child going there because he wouldn't work, right? Like, Kerwin.
So why does Kerwin matter with that as a background?
Because Kerwin matters because the investment in education says what we as a community believe about our young people. And what I've said is, like, I am fine with accountability, right? So when heat wasn't working, I didn't blame it all on the lack of funding, right? I said there were things we needed to tighten up. And we invited the business community in, the construction community in, and one of the things they did, they helped us tighten a few systems, but you know what they said? They could not believe that we were doing as well with the little bit we had. They were stunned. And so at some point, we can, you know, talk about accountability. I'm like, fine. I do probably more reports, more audits than any other school district in the state, quite frankly. I am fine with that. But at some point at the end of the day, what we believe about our children is directly tied to what we spend our money on.
Oh, I had Adrian Jones here to speak with us. I said, you know, it's a obvious vote. It's very obvious. Where do you where you put the money is where the
priority is. That's exactly right.
There's a scorecard on that.
Years ago, it was probably in a class that I took, maybe in my doctoral program. I don't remember. Someone put on the whiteboard, budgets at their core are value statements.
There you go. Absolutely. And in the same way, I mean, nobody has checkbooks anymore. But if you were to open up my ledger of withdrawals, checks, the whole 10 yards, it would tell you where our family priorities are. And we wouldn't have to write a word. All you would have to do is look. And one of the things that one of my favorite examples, and as you both know, my parents grew up in the Jim Crow South, not in very wealthy communities that had very little. But if you looked at the percentage of, for example, a church's offering that went to buy every young person notebooks, pencils, to go back to school, it would tell you what that community's priorities were. And so when we look at percentages of our budget relative to wealth, what are we spending it on, right? What are we spending it on? And to your point, look, an HVAC system costs a couple million dollars. Now, you can say it's not about the money. We patch. We have duct tape in places I never knew you could put duct tape. But it's at the end of the day, if you want a new HVAC system, you need a couple million dollars to do it. And so at some point, we've got to have the values discussion. We've got to be able to have real discussions about what it takes, right? And the bottom line is that if you look at the investment level in everything from infrastructure to classroom supports, right, it costs money to have a full-time social worker as compared to a half-time social worker. And then, yeah, tell me. Ask me to send you the sign-in sheets of the number of kids those folks have seen. You want surveys? Fine. Do the accountability piece, I have never had an issue with. It really, though, is it's dodging the real question, which is where are community's values?
Wow. Real quick, can we do community schools? Because we had Chris Battaglia on, Ben Franklin.
Yeah.
He blew us away. He put a face on it. I'm going to ask you as the superintendent, because community schools, big part of Kerwin. Why do community schools matter, and why will they help us be a better school system?
Community schools matter, one, because the schools really do ultimately belong to communities, right? And two, we cannot, as educators, and you both know this, we can't do it alone. I mean, the wholeness specialists, those are folks who come primarily from local communities, right? Community schools actually help educators connect families and young people to the additional resources that you're not going to find in a school. So young people who have gone through trauma, who've witnessed murders, and they're only 7 years old, right? A school, you know, a principal or a teacher is not trained to give the in-depth therapeutic care that requires. Well, if we have community school coordinators who know that Roberta's House does a fabulous job in supporting families who are homicide victims, then it's not putting it on the backs of teachers, right?
Specialists,
right? You're making the connection with a specialist. And so a lot of times it's that students and families don't always know the resources that are there. We know in some Tench Tillman, you were talking about the you know, kids who were absent in your school. One of the things that principal and her AP does, they go down a list every morning with their attendance person, and then they, the assistant principal and the community school specialist, literally call every single household. They tell stories just like yours of going in and walking into homes, knocking on the door. Let them in. And they bring the kids to school. There's stuff going on around. No questions asked. Just give us little Sonia.
Get it done.
And we'll make sure they get to school. And their attendance rate is one of the highest in the city. Dr. Salmon, our state superintendent, came to visit and said, how do you do it? And that's how they do it. But it's a combination of school staff and community support that's able to come around kids and families and make those connections we can't make on our own.
If anybody wants to listen more, Chris Battaglia joined us a couple episodes ago. Back in the
terrific
80s
description of community. I love your description of somebody standing. I know we have to run in the living room because, again, I'll go back to the Sparrows Point program. program. I can remember specifically teacher coming back and mom's on the phone saying, they just won't get up. Teacher said, I'll be right there. Knock, knock, knock. Walked in, yelled upstairs, Susie, whatever. Susie, you can stay there all you want, but I'm not leaving. Well, why are you here? I'm not leaving. So get dressed. That's and they right. come on down.
It reminds me of the movie you don't Stand have to By Me. Right? It's a little bit of that. Right?
You don't have to do it very much. I'm a lot smarter than I was an hour ago. How about you?
Absolutely. That's what happens. We hang out with Dr. Sonia Santalisi. Santalisis, excuse me. Why do I have a problem with the last syllable
in
that?
It is really all right. Don't worry about it.
Try it again.
Santalisis.
There you go. You got it. You got it. Where are we?
What
are we doing?
My family is very forgiving. Don't worry about it.
That's all right. I'm Nestor Aparicio. You think
there you go. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Don Moeller is here. We're over at State Fair. We're about to go get some shrimp and grits and some chicken and waffles and some other good stuff. I think he's going to have the carnivore Benedict before it's all over with. Appreciate you. Thanks so much.
Thank you all.
I love
really.
Seeing you.
Thanks for doing the hard work.
Thank you.
We're doing Baltimore Positive. We'll be back with more. We have Police Commissioner Harrison joining us in a couple of weeks. Go check out the schedule at Baltimore Positive. We are WNSD.net, AM 1570, doing overtime in Catonsville.